My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 17. That's episode X7 in WWE speak of Basically a Geek Show. I'm Mike. With me, as always, is Jack.
What up?
And we're going to start today with an update on the bad movie Public Defender. Nothing this week, but Jack is going to let us all know where he's at that and kind of explain maybe a bit of the process of why these segments have been a bit slow to come out. So have at it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, first off, I want to say thanks to all the listeners who have, presented for us the movies that they would like to see defended on the show. I do have a bit of a caseload. Currently on the slate is, and these are all viewer or listener suggestions, The Last Airbender, mm-hmm. Howard the Duck, mm-hmm. and Speed Racer, mm-hmm. And a fourth movie, which I have planned to do from the get-go, that will come at some point in the near future. But that one I'm keeping to myself. You of course know what it is, Mike.
I'm not gonna announce the title. Obviously, we've been kicking around some ideas for something special for this one. But I will say, you know, if anyone wants to try to take a guess at it, we're talking about a movie that people often consider, without hyperbole, to be the worst movie ever made.
I will probably get death threats for this.
Yes.
And not just from my ex-wife, which I'm used to, but I mean, from actual human people, I'll be getting them. And so, you know, I'm setting the sights high on this one. Maybe I'm overestimating my own bullshit shilling capabilities. But yes, I wanted to do this one for a while just for shiggles, if nothing else. So yeah, there's those three plus the unnamed fourth movie. In terms of why they've been taking a bit, basically it's been a case of kind of a time issue to an extent.
I mean, you've got to watch each one, right?
Yeah. And, you know, with the first two, there were movies that I was with both Battlefield Earth and Street Fighter. There are movies that I've watched on a regular basis and are very familiar with. I can recall most of them just
from
memory.
And that says so many things about you that you're someone who watches the Street Fighter movie just for pleasure.
I do. I watch it for enjoyment. I do. That's a thing that I do. But yeah, and with these, I haven't seen Speed Racer. I've not seen that one. I've seen The Last Airbender, and you know, I'll say up front, just personally, not speaking as the bad movie Public Defender, it didn't make me want to kill anybody. It wasn't that level of bad. It wasn't the Happening level of bad as far as M. Night Shyamalan movies go. Then I think I've just probably killed myself. Next time I'm super bad. Defend the Happening. Oh, fuck me.
Defend. Nobody's defending the Happening. I'm going to, as the Bags host, I am going to put – I'm laying down a law. You do not have – outside of The Last Airbender, you do have to do that one, but you will not be required to honor any requests for any other M. Night Shyamalan inspired movie. I'm thinking of giving After Earth an exception just to torture you.
Fuck you. God damn it.
Sixth Sense, yeah, that's mixed. But The Happening, Lady in the Water.
I actually liked Lady in the Water.
Oh, God. Okay, now you're going to have to defend that one because that one was piss poor. But, no. So, like, The Happening, you don't have to do The Happening, because that one was just stupid, and it deserves no defense. But that's kind of where we are on the bad movie public defender front. And like we said, that mystery movie will be, we're not sure what exactly we're going to do with it, but we've been kicking around some ideas to make it special and make it just not another segment on another episode.
Yeah. I can say with some confidence, you know, unless something in one of our other venues kind of opens up that's real pressing over the next week that dictates we take a lot of time to talk about it on the next episode, I will be set to, present my defense for one of these three movies, next week.
Ah, very good. Very good show, sir. Very good. pardon me. But moving on from there, we're going to talk some Transformers news. I'm going to start in what I would say is perhaps the bottom of the barrel when it comes to anything Transformers related, be it
And
media.
That, of course, means Creo.
Exactly. I was all ready to be happy that Creo had died, but apparently it limps along. And the latest offering is a set that is a constructed set of G1 Grimlock with little movie Creons.
You're a Creon.
The little Creons include a G1 styled Grimlock, a movie styled Bumblebee, Optimus Prime, Lockdown and Galvatron, and then of course there is the build of the set, which is a G1 Grimlock in dinosaur mode made out of Creo bricks.
But Mike, they have, what was it, Dinotech? They have Dinotech technology.
I don't know if this one has Dinotech, or Dinoforce is what it was.
Dinoforce, I'm sorry.
Which spoilers, is magnets. Very shitty magnets.
Dinoforce technology.
You put a piece of metal on one of the Decepticons, and there's a magnet in the dinosaur head of the set you've bought, and it just sticks into the set. And it just sticks into the head, and you can, like, have it like the Decepticons being eaten by the dinosaur that you've built, and it's just stupid and gimmicky. Doesn't look like this has any Dino Force power, none of that magnet stuff, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it, because this, from what I've heard, the movie Creo sets have been really shocking in terms of quality. I've seen examples of sets that have incomplete bricks, and I don't mean that, like, the set was missing a few bricks. I mean, the set had all the bricks.
The bricks themselves were incomplete.
The bricks themselves are incomplete. Like, there's a brick with, like, the last part of it is just not there because it didn't finish pouring the plastic into the mold for that brick. And the dinosaurs I've seen in this new Age of Extinction Creo line, because of course Age of Extinction's all about the Dinobots, the Dinobots that you can build, like, they look to be unbalanced, they look like the joints aren't able to hold them up, they're falling down, the brick quality's terrible, and now we get a more G1 styled Grimlock, and I'm just curious, does being more of a G1 style endear this set to you more than every other Creo set that we've seen for this line?
I wouldn't say using the term endear is very strong when it comes to anything involving Creo. Okay, I hate it less. I hate it less than I do some of the other Creo sets that I've seen. But that's not. I mean, that's not an endorsement. That's not me saying that I like it, and I'm certainly not going to waste money on this goddamn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does it offend me less? Yeah, it does. It's, you know, I mean, it doesn't look too god-awful. I mean, but there's still the fact that the Creo line as a whole is just utter shit and stupid. And as I alluded earlier, you know, me and Mike have come to the conclusion that the term Creon sounds like something that you would call somebody as an insult.
Yeah, it sounds like an insult. Like,
fucking Creon.
Like a peon, you know? Like,
it's a cross between Cretan and peon.
Creon. That's exactly what that word is.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, here on Basically Geek Show, we are redefining the English language.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I just see Creo and I I don't see why it has a reason to exist because, okay, it's got the Transformers property, obviously. You know, it had the G.I. Joe property, and of course they could still make G.I. Joe whenever they want because it's all Hasbro. But the G.I. Joe line, as we talked about a few shows back, is basically dead.
G.I. Joe's 50th anniversary. What are they doing to celebrate? They're getting rid of it.
So.
Okay. All right. Well then.
So, you know, I don't think we'll be seeing very many G.I. Joe Creos. We've got the Cityville Creo sets. We've got the Dungeons and Dragons Creo sets. We've got this Transformers Creo set. And I kind of just look at these. And aside from Transformers, I really don't see what Creo offers anyone that Lego can't offer. The only thing I can really think of is that the Creo, like the Creons, the little guys, are more posable. They're more posable than your standard Lego bricks because they have ball joints in the legs and arms, whereas Lego bricks, the Lego figures don't. But the problem that I'm seeing is that Mega Bloks has really committed to the articulated minifigure thing. So if you want a building block set that has really articulated little guys, you go Mega Bloks. And that's what they're doing. And then, you know, Lego is the classically styled, you know, limited posability minifigures. And no, Creo just sort of operates in this gray zone in the middle where, like, they're more posable than Lego, but they're still kind of crap compared to Mega Bloks. And the quality, you know, I've picked up a few Transformers Creons, the individual packs that they sell. I picked up a few here and there. And the quality, just the build quality of the plastic and of the sets themselves is just piss poor. Like, you go to, like, turn the hands of the little Creon figures, and when you turn them, you get stress marks along the cuff of the arm.
So you're saying that the structural integrity of your average Creon is somewhere between good plastic and a Rice Krispie.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, I think if Hasbro really wants to make a go with this Creo thing, at least with regards to Transformers, since they're obviously – they're not shitting and they're not getting off the pot with it. I mean, they insist on making them. But they're not doing it right. I mean, in terms of at a basic fundamental level, you know, and earlier when you're talking about these malformed bricks and shit, I just have this image in my mind of like a parody Creo commercial. And it shows like this bucket of malformed bricks just pouring out as thick as a brick by Jethro Tull plays in the background. Excuse me. But yeah, they're not doing any of it right. I mean, they're getting their ass kicked by Mega Bloks of all fucking things.
I mean, we've heard about how Creo sales have not been where Hasbro wants. Now, none of us have seen Hasbro's books. So for all we know, as shittily as these sets are selling, maybe due to the way that the numbers work out, they're still selling enough for it to be profitable, and that's why they just haven't died yet.
Well,
like maybe the profit margins are really easy to meet on these things, and that's why they keep pumping them out.
Maybe, and you gotta keep in mind, maybe this is something that they, you know, there are the diehard collectors who, okay, there's two groups of people who at either level, and it's really the same level of fanaticism. The difference is the mindset and the desire and the mind behind it. So you have two groups of people that are going to want anything and everything with Transformers on it. And those are 6-year-olds and collectors.
Yes.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not likening collectors to 6-year-olds except in that one sense where the fanaticism for the brand is to the point where, like, you know, like I was when I was a kid where, you know, I had the Transformers lunchbox. And back then, goddammit, they were made out of metal.
None of this plastic.
Yeah, fuck that. But, you know, it's a good thing now because evidently if Hasbro is making the plastic, it'd fucking fall apart. But, you know, you had the Transformers lunchbox. I even had those stupid goddamn Transformers stamps. I remember those things. And it was just like a little minifigure. Like a little mini statue with a little stamp at the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And I had some of those, and, you know, there were stickers and all this other shit. So, you know, you want anything and everything that's Transformers. And, you know, so there's two groups of people that are in that category, and I guess those are the people that are keeping Creo afloat, probably more so on the six-year-old end than, you know, the people who are our age and, you know, the 9 years in between us that are collecting these things. Because, you know, the adult collector, you know, they'll go out and they'll buy maybe one or two, and they'll say something along lines of what you have, or, oh my God, this is shit. And, you know, sorry, I'm not doing this.
I've heard from adult Lego collectors who are into the building brick things, the building brick, market, and they've, the consensus that I've got is that, you know, Mega Bloks and Lego both kind of have their followers, but that both kind of look down on Creo for the shitty build quality of the bricks.
And, you know, it's a shame because there's two ways Hasbro could have done this, and they haven't done either. One was to have just fucking licensed Transformers off to Mega Bloks or Lego and let someone do it right.
I'm convinced that's how this started.
Oh, I'm sure it probably is.
And then someone probably insulted someone in a boardroom and Hasbro was like, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah, they packed up their toys and they went home.
Literally. Like, literally, yeah, packed, yeah, up their toys.
Yeah, they literally packed up their fucking toys and they headed the fucking house. And they're like, you know, fuck you, we'll do this ourselves. And
half cocked and clueless, the American way.
Yeah, exactly. I should probably be offended by that, but there's very much truth in that statement. And that's what Hasbro is doing with this. And the levels, it's mediocrity even too complimentary of a word to use for it.
I mean, when you have a set and the big part and the centerpiece of the set, and I'm not speaking particularly as Grimlock figure because we have yet to see any in-hand reviews of this set. It just started showing up in stores, but I'm talking about the Creo sets that deal with the movie Dinobots.
Right.
And when the central figure of one of these sets is a Spinosaurus Creo figure that can't even stand up under its own weight because A, the blocks themselves are unfinished, and B, because the C-clips that you connect the feet to the legs are so weak they can't even hold the figure up. Come on, that's amateur hour, guys. Come on,
right? Yeah, it really is. And the thing is, and I'm going to beat this horse again a little bit, but I mean, it kind of ties in, at least in my mind, to some of the lessening of quality that we're even seeing in some of the non-Creo figures, mm-hmm. some of the actual Transformers that have come out, specifically those regarding the movie line. But this overall just lack of giving shit. There seem to be exponentially fewer fucks given at Hasbro on a month-by-month basis. And normally when I look at this, I would see a company that's in financial trouble and they're having to cut corners and all this other shit.
That was a bit of the problem with the Generations lines that dealt with the Fall of Cybertron stuff.
But they're not in financial trouble is the thing.
Well, no, they weren't. But what happened was because the economy got the way it got, the price of oil went up, and oil, of course, is needed to make plastic. So that's kind of what I think a lot of this is coming from. The price of oil's gone up, and Hasbro's trying to adjust the best way that they can to kind of make figures, but do it in a way that will cost less oil, and as a result, have less plastic pieces. I mean, I've got the two toys sitting on my desk right now. I've got the original Classics Starscream mold, which was created in 2006. And I've got the Armada Starscream Generations toy, which is 2013-2014. And, you know, a lot of people will bemoan the Classics Starscream mold because, well, it is an older mold and some of its shortcomings have become more apparent in age. And it did get overexposed. But if I'm just holding both of my hands, the older mold seems like it's got more to it. There's more pieces. There's more plastic. There's more umph to it. Whereas the newer Armada toy, which is homaging the Armada design, it's not bad by any means. It's still a very good figure, but you can tell that it's using less plastic, that it's using thinner plastic, that it's not as weighty. And again, I know why that is, the economy, price of oil, all that stuff. And given all those limitations, they still made a hell of a toy, but, and Hasbro's not in financial trouble, but it's just trying to figure out a way to kind of exist in this new, market where the price of oil has just kind of impacted what they can do with their plastic molds.
I get it. I mean, I do get that. I'm just saying, you know, look, Hasbro, if this is what you're going to do to compensate, then for the love of God, go back to what you were doing and charge a few bucks more. You know, charge $5 more a figure or something like that if they absolutely must. Because this is, as you said, this is going to be fucking amateur hour. And we all know that Hasbro is very much capable of producing very high quality, very awesome things. They do it. They still do it with a lot of the Generations figures. And even, you know, the Movie Hound looks really good.
Movie Hound looks good. I've got nothing but good things to say about the two Dinobots I bought.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's almost like they have some kind of mood disorder where and then other days they're just like, fuck it. I'm just going to phone it in and then go home and watch Oprah.
I could spend an extra 20 minutes designing this Drift toy, but fuck it. Breaking Bad's on and, you know.
Yeah, you know, or life is pain. Even if the toy is awesome,
we all
it's
still
not going to change. Yeah, we all still die, so it really doesn't matter. I would love to see the We All Still Die in the End edition of Bumblebee.
It's just got the saddest little robot face.
Yeah, and I would love for that fucker to have a voice chip.
Oh, like Eeyore or Bumblebee?
Yeah, or even just like really sad bleeping and blopping a la the first Michael Bay trilogy. Yeah, just really depressed beeping and booping. That would be fucking great. And I'd be like, yes. You suffer. You know what you have done, little bee. Yeah. This Creo thing, I don't know what the fuck they're doing with it. I don't know what they're planning on doing with it, or even if they know what they're planning on doing
with
it. Well,
I mean, honestly, given that it kind of just seems to be going, I mean, it's got some direction now with Age of Extinction, but once that runs its course, I'm not sure what they go back to doing, and I don't know, like, I'll be the first, I don't know the exact economics at work in Hasbro. I don't know what resources get allocated where. But yeah. All this plastic you're pouring into these Creo molds, how about, you know, dedicate that to the mainline Transformers, and see what happens. Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing. I admit I'm coming at this from a layman's point of view. But that's just sort of my initial gut reaction.
And, you know, I get it. Business is a lot like politics in the sense that it's easy for someone who's not in the position to armchair quarterback and say, well, you know, you should do this, you should do that. And, you know, we don't know the books. We don't know the logistics and so on and so forth behind it. But I don't think we're wrong, and I don't think we're remiss to say there's got to be some better option to give everyone at least a little bit of what they're wanting. I think, you know, honestly, with the Creo thing, what I see people mostly doing is collecting the Creons. Yeah. I think maybe they should just like maybe shift to that and just kind of shift shift the paradigm, so to speak. And, you know, just start offering the Creons.
They do to an extent. They have the blind pack ones where like they just release. They say, like, there's going to be 12 in this set, and then they release them all in plastic bags with no window on them so that you, like, basically get them randomly. And that's a thing with minifigures. Blind-packed minifigures is just something that LEGO's been doing forever.
Okay. Now that's not what I'm thinking though. Now that right there is just basically ripping people off. I mean,
the people in the brick collecting community like to say it's a challenge to have to like field the bags and hunt down the ones you want and what have you. Like, it is a very popular business model amongst the brick people.
I guess that's just a thing that I don't get. But no, what I was saying is something along the lines of, you know, stop doing the sets or stop doing them the way they're doing them. Maybe reduce it down to just like little, oh, I don't know, like the fucking unfoldable play sets and things like that they used to do back in the day.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, have your Creon figures. And do things to make those figures more collectible because that's what people are going for. So, you know, go back for a lack of design on those a bit. Keep what you're doing right. Add a bit more articulation. Use some of the plastic that you're wasting on these fucking sets the way they're doing them now. Make these figures a little bit better. Maybe do something like a bit fancier packaging. Maybe include like a collector card or some kind of bollocks with them.
You've been bitten by the collector card bug, haven't you?
No, I haven't. No, what I'm just saying is, you know, I'm looking at this.
You get one Henke Prime, and then suddenly it's collector cards everywhere.
Well, it's not a bad idea. I mean, at least from the standpoint of, you know, taking what's the strong point of the Creo line as it appears to be, at least if you could say there is a strong point, and just kind of focusing on that and do things to make that more appealing and to move more units of those. And I think they would do a lot better with that than they will do with continuing like the buildable robot thing. Cause they already have construct bots and you have Creon or Creo, where you build your own fucking transformer. A, God damn it, Hasbro. That's what we pay you for. B, do we really need two lines that are just kind of overlapping in the same way? I mean,
yeah,
the end product looks different, but you're still doing the same fucking thing. You're still building your transformer. And do we really need that?
And if toy shelves are any indication, neither are selling.
Yeah. I know the fucking construct bots aren't selling because the fucking Walmart here, and you know, for our listeners, I live in a very small town in Kentucky. I can see all of the town from my front porch. And, you know, there's a population, 6,000 people in the town that I live in. Yes, I do have indoor plumbing and I do have internet access, obviously. And, no, I've never slept with a cousin, though there was one that wasn't too bad back then.
Oh, God damn.
Anyways,
move on.
I digress.
Move on before you go to a dark place.
But, you know, so the Walmart here, everyone from three or four counties around, because this actually is the metropolitan area for this part of the state, and everyone, you know, comes to this fucking Walmart, and they have a very small section of their shelf real estate devoted to Transformers. And more often than not, when you go in there, it's fucking just great. There's nothing there. It's desolate wasteland. And then you look over just to the right and you see like fucking stacks of construct bots, yeah. A lot of them gathering dust.
I've got a bit more options regarding that. I've got a Walmart. I've got a couple Targets and I've got Toys R Us. And I'm going to tell you. Toy shelves across the Kitchener-Waterloo area. I mean, the Constructobots are still there. I've seen the same Constructobot sets for months now. I've seen the same Bumblebees and Blitzwings and Prime Megatron 2-packs and Hound Constructobot sets that I've been seeing for months. They're not selling. It's just not working.
You should conduct an experiment. And you should just like go in there with like a black Sharpie and just very like nonchalantly, like just put a little black dot on a place on some of these packages, like on the fronts of the racks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a couple weeks later when you go back in, look and see if those same ones are still sitting there, or if they're just restocking them.
God. No, they have to be the same ones, because if they've been regularly restocking them, how many Hound Constructobot sets do you have that they can't?
Okay, the wall of Bumblebee. The wall of Bumblebee, that's all I'm saying.
The wall of I really hope Hasbro learned a lesson from that. I really do.
I don't know. I don't have it in my heart to be that charitable anymore. And that's not me saying anything about Hasbro. That's just saying in general, just is a testament to stupidity. You know, the whole bumble rape phenomena. I don't know.
Four bumblebees across three lines all coexisting on the same shelf.
I mean, I think we're okay. Even with the AOE line, we've got three different fucking versions of Optimus Prime. In the higher price points, we've got the first edition, we've got the, you know, the regular retail edition.
And then we've got the Voyager.
And then we've got, the Platinum Sands Paint But Pay More For It edition. Mm-hmm. And again, it's, you know, I don't think anyone can question my love of the Optimus Prime, but come the fuck on, do we really need that many versions?
And one of them
you can't even be arsed to paint? And you have the temerity to call it silver? Fuck you!
Well, at least it seems like Bumblebee, they tuned down the Bumblebee process, because as far as I know, there's only gonna be two Bumblebees at a higher price point. Well, three. We're going to have there's the older Camaro one that they released.
Which is the only one that I'm interested in.
They're gonna release an updated new Camaro one later. And then there's gonna be the leader class. Bumblebee. So only three Bumblebees, and when you compare that to Age of Extinction, Dark of the Moon, that's actually a huge step down and very good to see.
Yeah, it is. They're doing that right. I still question the need for a leader class Bumblebee.
Yeah, I do too, because I don't see the need for a leader class figure that's essentially a car.
Yeah, and we don't even have a leader class Galvatron, do we?
No, I mean, apparently what Hasbro said way back in Dark of the Moon was that leader class Decepticons don't sell.
Okay.
So they have decided to focus on leader class Autobots. That being said, I would have preferred a leader Hound, perhaps, because he's like a bigger guy and he has a big vehicle mode. So it would make sense to do a leader class Hound, because it's like, oh, big vehicle mode, biggest toy size class. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't see the point at having a leader size Camaro figure. I mean, scale has never been perfect in Transformers, but that just kind of seems absurd.
No, I get you. And that's my thing with it too. I mean, I get it. You know, an 8-year-old doesn't give two shits about scaling. I understand. Well, I don't know. I kind of did when I was that age. Cause I would look at how they're portrayed in the cartoon. And then I'd look at my toys. I'm like, that's not right. But on the whole, you know, that's a much less particular audience than, you know, you and I are when it comes to those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, yeah, it still bothers me. You know, the scaling thing, the scaling issue of just it not comparing right juxtaposed next to OP or Grimlock or something. I don't think we need that again. Something like Hound would be good. Or even some of the other Dinobots that are kind of cool, like the Spinosaurus would easily.
Leader class Scorn. Make it happen.
Any of the Dinobots really would, well, except maybe the Velociraptor. Most of the Dinobots.
Your Velociraptor easily hatred, sir.
Well, no, again, that's a scaling issue. But yeah, fuck Velociraptors. I'm tired of them. Overworn their welcome a long time ago. But, you know, any of those would easily lend themselves to a leader class figure. So where are some of those maybe, you know? But I get it. It's not Bumblebee, and the kids love Bumblebee. I don't think they love him as much as you say, as they say.
Look, I saw the wall of Bumblebee, okay? People weren't buying him.
People can only produce so many children, Hasbro.
No, well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing again. Even if kids love Bumblebee, and let's assume for the sake of argument they do, you already sell a child one Bumblebee. He's got his Bumblebee.
Yeah. And, you know, all the different versions, most parents are going to be like, you already have a Bumblebee. Shut the fuck up. You know?
I mean, at least sometimes when they do, like, stealth Bumblebee, he's black, and then I guess you can get away with it because it's a different color, and that might be enough to trick parents into buying a second one. Yeah. But, excuse me. A lot of these Dark of the Moon Bumblebee toys, when it got really ridiculous, it would be the same yellow sports car with black stripes. They just changed the stripes a few, a little bit, and then sell it as a new variant.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? What, really? Like, not even kids are this stupid.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, they have the ones where they don't really even change the look at all. They just give it some different little gimmicky thing. Whatever the fuck, Kung Fu grip, give me your face action, whatever the hell they want to do with it at that particular time. And the toy looks the same. It's just got a different gimmick to it. And that's, I've always thought that to be really cheesy.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed. But, moving on. It seems like, Linkin Park's Reign of Terror over the Transformers live action movie franchise is over.
Thank fuck.
Imagine Dragons. Imagine Dragons. They are working on the new quote-unquote theme song for Transformers 4 Age of Extinction. Finally, Linkin Park has been vanquished to the emo-filled abyss where they respond.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to say this, and I think this says all that anyone needs to know about Linkin Park. I liked him when I was 15.
See, that,
there you
that,
go.
That carries a different weight with me, though. Maybe I'm just that static. Maybe I'm that much of a fuddy-duddy. Mm-hmm. But then again, I liked weird shit when I was 15, and I like weird shit now. Like, when I was 15, I was mostly listening to oldies and shit like that, and I still do. So a lot of the songs that I listen to now are the same shit I was listening to when I was 15. I was into, like, the end bands at the time, and frankly, I couldn't even tell you who they were. You know, it would have been in the early 90s, so I guess like shit like Nirvana and Guns N' Roses and stuff like that, which I didn't acquire a taste for Guns N' Roses until I was older, ironically. But, you know, so to me that doesn't carry the same weight. But, yeah, it does very much – they do very much appeal to the angsty and retarded teen demographic. Mm-hmm. Because the two were not synonymous. There's angst in knowing how to handle it and not being a chode with it. And then there's chody angst. And Linkin Park, to me, appeals to the angsty chodes out there. They're just all like, I've got problems.
Are you calling 15-year-old me an angsty chode?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll call you right now an angsty chode if you want. I mean, I don't care. Well, maybe not angsty. You're still a chode, though.
Well... It is excuse me, sorry. It is worth noting that Imagine Dragons, new theme song, I think it's called War Cry.
Battle Cry.
Battle Cry, yes. What did you think?
Very Man of the title like made me kind of excited of the song because I'm like, ooh, sounds kinda like Man of War.
Mm-hmm.
Obscure early 80s metal reference that most people won't get probably. But you know, so I listened to it, and unfortunately in the, you know, clip that they showed on TFW, they didn't really play much of the song. What I heard, I definitely liked. Imagine Dragons, you know, they're a pretty good band. One of the few newer bands that I actually give two shits to listen to. And so, yeah, I liked it. And as you said, it's not Linkin Park, so anything basically above that's a step in the right direction, you know.
Indeed. Indeed. I'm a fan of them. I wouldn't have pegged them, honestly, to do a Transformers movie. And then again, I wouldn't have pegged Linkin Park to do it either. But
I think Linkin Park just needed money at that point.
After seeing what Imagine Dragons brought to the table, I like it. It's more – I like the use of percussions, and I think that's very appropriate with Transformers.
Yeah, and I'm thinking it sounds like it's going to have a bit of that kind of like symphonic rock feel, which I really like. I've always been kind of a fan of that even before it even existed, really. I was always like, you know, someone really needs to do that. And then, you know, now it's kind of more popular. I'm like, yes. I always thought that was a really good pairing. But yeah, you know, I look forward to it. I think it'll, at the very least, it'll be listenable, mm-hmm. if not awesome. Hopefully awesome, but at the very least, it should be listenable.
Indeed, and hopefully this will finally put an end to all of those AMV music videos on YouTube using Linkin Park of Transformers because, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, Linkin Park wore out its welcome a long time ago, so.
Yeah, I never really actively listened to them. I had a lot of girlfriends that were into them. Maybe that tells you something about what my love life was like back then. But, you know, so I got, you know, I had them crammed down my throat. But yeah, I'm glad to not be having to hear any more of their tripe.
Indeed. Hopefully should Imagine Dragons get an exclusive Transformer out of this, it'll be better than that unpainted gold sound wave that, Linkin Park, kind of, blighted the world with. Moving on. We have a Hall of Fame to discuss, sir.
Indeed we do. So it's that time of the year again, huh?
Transformers Hall of Fame. Now we are both members at TFW, so we can only speak to the TFW processes. Although we do know that they are duplicated at other sites such as Cybertron.com and the AllSpark. What did you think of this year's Hall of Fame list at TFW? Our finalists that we can vote on. Now this isn't for the Hall of Fame quite yet. This is just to see who the TFW members would like. And here's your list. RC, Black Arachnia from Beast Wars, Galvatron, Hot Rod, Lockdown, Prowl,
okay.
Rat Trap, and Skybite.
I guess I'll probably throw my lot on RC then.
I threw my lot in with Prowl. He's who I threw a vote towards.
Prowl always was kind of a red shirt to me. I mean, I know that's kind of being unfair. I get it. And I'm not saying that – I mean, I know he was one of the major G1 Transformers. I get it. You know, I know. But to me, that was just the impression I subjectively always got off him. He was just kind of like there.
To me, Prowl gets in because, as far as the design goes, to me, when I think Autobot car, Prowl hit all the notes. Wing doors, hood chest, back becomes the legs. Like, Prowl is, to me, the Autobot car that all other Autobot cars spawned from.
See, and for me, that was Jazz.
Okay, I could see that.
I mean, it's the same fucking mold. I mean, you know.
Actually, no, they weren't. They were different. They just had similar design cues, but they were not the same mold.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll stand humbly corrected. But yeah, no, for me, it was Jazz. I was also a big Wheeljack fan, but thankfully he's already made it into the Hall of Fame.
He did, beating out Beast Wars Megatron.
Yeah, and I'm gonna say something.
Although Beast Wars Megatron then got in a year later. Damn you people.
Well, you know, Wheeljack got in first, so that's what matters. And I think anyone who listens to the show on a regular basis knows that Mike and I have no love of Beast Wars. We're not fans of Critter Formers.
No.
Pretty much just the idea of robots turning into animals is kind of stupid.
Unless they're robotic animals.
Well, yeah, and then even then it has to be, well, like a dinosaur or something that you wouldn't really, I mean, like, just something turning into like a robotic tiger or something. Well, that might be kind of cool, I guess, and there was the whole Voltron thing.
Predacons.
Predacons were pretty cool. Predaking was always one of my favorites as a kid, and yeah, but, so yeah, I guess of that lot, you know, I would probably go for RC, though I wouldn't be too offended if Hot Rod got in. Prowl, I'm kind of meh about. Basically anything that's not a Critter Former, I'll be okay with. Mm-hmm. And I guess Galvatron kind of deserves a spot too. I mean, in terms of actual real Transformers that do what Transformers should do, send your comments and hate mail to. Anyways, so
we're on Twitter now too. So send us your hate mail on Twitter. Basically a geek show.
No, it's at a geek show.
Oh, at a geek show. Oh.
Yeah, I tried getting basically geek. And, to keep in with the, Bass nomenclature with how they did it, but that was already taken. So I had to go with a geek show, but yes, we are on Twitter. So, you know, feel free to give us a follow and all that good shit. And you'll get to hear a lot of my late night drunken ramblings because Mike wants no part of the Twitter. So I'm pretty much running that.
I don't know how Twitter works.
He doesn't know how the Twitch shitter works.
I don't. It's magic to me how you can talk to people with hashtags.
And so here you have – there's almost a decade gap between Mike and myself. I'm 35. He's 26. So this myth of older people not getting – well, I'm not an older person, but in this case, he's much less technologically adept than myself. I blame Canadian genes personally, but – you know, but yes, at a geek show on the Twitch shitter, and you will find us there. And if you have anything, just because Mike says he doesn't really, he wants me to run the Twitter doesn't mean that he won't be able to see it or hear of anything that's interesting or aimed at him. So if you want to say hey to Mike or ask him anything, you can put on there too and I'll run it by him.
Sounds good. But,
So you voted for Prowl, huh?
I did vote for Prowl on the TFW boards, yes.
Now, this is only my second year, really, of even being involved with the whole – is it my second or third? No, it's third, because there's a year of Wheeljack where we single-handedly got him in there.
Yeah, both you and I voted on the – when it came down to the finalists on the Hasbro site when they put up the voting, we just spammed Wheeljack.
Yeah, we spammed the living shit out of that.
So everyone who was pissed off that a Beast Wars character didn't get in that year, yo!
You're welcome.
Yo!
What up?
go on. You were saying third year.
Yeah, third year. So it seems to come and go, giggity, so quickly every year that I almost come like, wait, what? Like, you know, just the other day I'd put in, my nominations for who I wanted on the list and it was, Rewind and, Retgar and I forget who else. There was a third. Oh, Jetfire. Rewind, Jetfire and Retgar. I put on there because I've always had a very big soft spot for Retgar. And, then that was just, I don't know, a couple days ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's always like, now you're already like, oh, well, these are the finals that you can vote on for the finals for the finals for the finals. I'm like, well, fuck me.
It's a process. Basically what happens is each site has a thread where they say, list anyone you want to be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And then each site's moderators, after a couple days, go through the thread, and they see which characters have gotten the most nominations. And then, like, the top number of characters with the most nominations get put to a vote. And then each website goes to Hasbro and says, here's the way our votes shaked out. Hasbro counts them all and then says, these are the characters who made the final cut, and then they put out for a vote of their own that we vote to see who goes into the Hall of Fame. I'm going to keep nominating Rewind until the end of time. And I'm going to say that everyone who didn't vote for Rewind, who didn't nominate Rewind, is a homophobe. I'm going to lay that down. I will lay down that gauntlet.
I hope
you all look at yourselves in the mirror. It's 2014. Okay.
are we done or would you like to start singing Swing Low Sweet Chariot?
Six Separate Tyrannus!
Oh my god. So once again, you find yourself oppressed by the internet at large.
Yes.
I voted just on the basis of good fiction, to be honest with you.
Well, yes, that too. It is amazing how that all worked out, that when you had people who weren't Hasbro writing fiction, it got good.
Yeah, because I like the idea of, you know, again, as we've discussed, I really like the idea of using this as something, you know, just because it's Transformers and there's toys involved and other shit, doesn't mean that it can't be as relevant in its fiction as anything else. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, beating this dead horse again a little bit, you know, IDW is a perfect example of that. And I think the best example of what IDW has done, or one of the best, is the, you know, the Chrome Dome and Rewind plot. So, yeah, you know, it got in on that basis with
which me. Which is picking up now, because now Chrome Dome thinks that Rewind is talking to him from beyond the grave. And I don't know how that's gonna play out, but I'm sure.
Is there a dead bot whisperer?
No, they need like the Transformers version of the Sixth Sense kid. Like maybe Wheelie sees dead robots.
No. Have like Steven Edwards make an appearance. No, Coast to Coast, a Coast to Coast Transformers tie-in. I mean, we've got Evangelion already, for Christ's sake. So
bring George Norrie on board.
Yes. Fuck yes. And again, I'm going to plug this show again. If you like conspiracies or hearing weird shit or drunks talking in the middle of the night, fucking listen to Coast AM. You're doing yourself a favor.
Or hell,
awesome.
If you like drunks talking in the middle of the night, then you can just listen to us and, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Or you can just call us. I mean, we don't really care. Sup? How you doing? Just chilling.
Yes. Chilling. Like, I don't know how that's going to shape up. I maybe, like, they're going to bring Miss Cleo in, and they're going to have, like, a seance, and, like, I don't know, maybe Rewind's trapped in the great beyond.
Call now for your free reading. Oh, my God. I told you my ex-wife used to do the Miss Cleo line. She was one of Miss Cleo's operators, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And, oh, God, she hated me so bad. Because, like, one night she was – basically you just log in through the phone, and they would send you a call every now and then. Mm-hmm. And one night, me and my friend were shit drunk, and she gets a call, and she's in there. She's in the living room doing her fucking reading thing, and me and him come blundering in there, and I just yell out, call now for your free reading. If looks could kill, I would have been atomized on the spot.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm gonna be perfectly honest, and again, I'm a bad fan. I don't frequent other fan boards, so I don't know what their finalists shaked out to be.
I'm a lazy fan, and I don't do that.
but just looking at the TFW finalists, and I'm not trying to bash, you know, TFW at all, but in my opinion, the TFW finalists this year aren't kind of capturing me. I mean, I voted for Prowl, but that was sort of my least offensive vote. Like, everyone else, every other year, there'd always be one character. Be like, oh, yeah, it'd be awesome if he got in. Last year, it was Ultra Magnus. Year before that, it was Wheeljack. So, you know, just seeing this list, voting anything Beast Wars related. So that basically leaves me with Skybite, Prowl, Lockdown, Hot Rod, Galvatron, and RC. I mean, the argument with RC was that she was the first female to be part of the main cast. And, you know, I guess so, but I don't know. RC didn't really do much after the movie. Galvatron and Hot Rod, I still kind of associate with the purge of all the good characters. Lockdown, you know, maybe he'll be good in the movie, but I'm not an animated fan. And then Skybite was funny in Robots in Disguise. I liked Skybite, but I don't know, I gotta give it to Prowl just cause, you know, G1er, I guess, if you want to throw accusations my way.
For me, it's kind of the same with me. It's just like, none of them were like, ooh, they've got to get in, mm-hmm. you know. But to be fair, mm-hmm. I haven't most of those already gotten in.
Yeah, that's the thing with the Hall of Fame. They need to stop doing this thing annually. Here, let me pull up who is actually in the Hall of Fame. It is a pretty big list. I had it and then I closed it because I'm stupid. Okay. Here it no, sorry.
You lost it again, didn't you?
I lost it again. And needless to say that the Hall of Fame, it's pretty extensive right now. Right. And Transformers, it's not a situation where the franchise or new characters come in. Oftentimes, when the franchise is rebooted, characters are reused. Optimus Prime, Ratchet, Starscream, Galvatron, or
right, they're pretty much all reused most of the time.
Yeah. Okay, so this is – okay, found it. This is the current Hall of Fame listing. As of now, these characters are in the Hall of Fame. Optimus Prime, Megatron, Bumblebee, Starscream, Beast Wars Dinobot, Ironhide, Ratchet, Soundwave, Waspinator from Beast Wars, Grimlock, Shockwave Jazz, Wheeljack, Beast Wars Megatron, Ultra Magnus. You'd be hard-pressed to find more that are worthy, really.
I mean, really, who else do you need? I'm looking over a list right now. Like, I'm looking at my G1 TF poster on the wall, and I'm just kind of like scanning over them.
Yeah.
And trying to see, you know, who's on here who really needs to. Now, I could make an argument for Devastator.
But do you put him in, or do you put the Constructicons in? Like, how does that work?
Because I don't know. I mean, I would go with Devastator himself,
mm-hmm.
and you know the Constructicons and everything else kind of included as a matter of course.
So kind of like how when in the WWE Hall of Fame when they just inducted the entire Four Horsemen.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And because you know Devastator was the first combiner, and. Just from both standpoints, from the standpoint of someone watching the show as a kid and from the standpoint of someone who actually had Devastator as a kid,
mm-hmm.
both were really epic moments. And, you know, one of those things that always kind of stands out, you know, one of my first things when I think of Transformers, you know, after you think of Prime and Megatron and Starscream and all the other shit, I think Devastator.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of surprised that he's not in there. So, and had I known that in retrospect, I would have put him up there on PFW, but.
A few people did. Just not enough to obviously make the final list.
Yeah. So, you know, oh well, there's next year for that. But yeah, we're getting to the point where there's not going to be a whole lot we can really do.
I mean, are we going to get to the point where we just induct the entire G1 cast? And if that's that's going to be what happens, then it becomes less a Hall of Fame and just, this is a list of characters who are in Transformers.
Right, and that's kind of, you know, it's like, you know, what point do we get to Huffer for Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I mean, it honestly is going to become that because, like I said, you know, characters are reimagined. We don't get a lot of new characters in it. Like, I think the biggest new character would have been, you had Hotshot in Armada, and then Bulkhead, and Lockdown from Animated kind of made.
Well, now, Bulkhead was in Energon.
It was a different character, though.
Oh, yeah.
Bulkhead, as we know him today.
Yeah, true.
Was with Animated. They also had Lugnut in Animated. The movie kind of had Barricade, who made it into the franchise as a whole. But by and large, when there's a new franchise, you just take the old characters and you reimagine them. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm saying that from a Hall of Fame standpoint, you got to scale this back to maybe once every 5 years or so. Just so we don't, like, flood it with minor characters who we put in because everyone else is already there.
I could also make an argument for a twofer for Astro Train and Blitzwing.
So we're going to leave Octane out to just as the Decepticon triple changer no one loves?
Yes. Aww. And the reason why I say this is because
But here's my argument for Octane. There's actually a scene in the in the cartoon where he is watching Transformers porn. Or at least a pinup girl. He's looking at like a robotic pinup girl. He's like, "Oh yeah."
Okay, so maybe Octane then. My reasoning behind Astro Train and Blitzwing, of course, if nothing else than Blitzwing, because of his tactical brilliance.
Oh yeah, that episode where they team up to take to take control. They trap Megatron and Starscream underground.
Yes, and that alone to me, just the hilarity of that episode. A lot of the G1 episodes really to me haven't held up very good. They come across as kind of cheesy and ham-fisted, but I could always go back and watch that one episode and I'll laugh my ass off.
Yeah, where they decide Blitzwing and Astro Train, for those who are unaware, the two triple changers at the time, they're like, hey, we should take over the Decepticons. So Starscream's always power hungry. So they go to Starscream and like, hey, let's three of us take over. And they're like, no, you're going to lead Megatron into a trap, and then we'll save you, but like screw Megatron over. And Starscream's like, yeah. But then they double cross Starscream and they trap both him and Megatron underground. And there's Megatron going, this is either a trap or you're stupid. And Starscream's yelling, I'm stupid. And then Megatron starts like beating him with his fusion cannon.
No, the part that I thought was the most hilarious was when fucking Blitzwing takes a high school football coach hostage and is just like,
yeah, he uses him for strategy. Like,
yeah, you are one of your people's premier tacticians. You will advise me.
Yeah, yeah, and he's
what?
Like, yeah, and he's like, and he's like, how do we keep the Autobots at bay? He's like, I don't know, zone defense?
Yeah.
And so he's ordering the Constructicons to build, like, this concrete maze around the football stadium that he's made his base.
Yeah.
And the Constructicons are like, what the fuck are we doing? And he's like, it's a zone defense, fools!
Yeah. Everybody knows that.
And then and then Astro Train's big plan was to, like, hook a bunch of trains up to a computer and use the trains to take over the world somehow.
Because, yes.
It was basically the episode where, like, the two biggest morons somehow blundered their way into control, and then we saw what happened.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. It's one of my favorite G1 episodes, right next to the time that Cyclonus took Galvatron to the therapy planet.
That was awesome.
And he made a gun and basket weaving class.
So yeah, that's pretty much the Hall of Fame, our picks for that for this year. And, there was a new TFAOE, TV spot on that
yes,
you want to talk about.
Yes. Yeah, there was, we didn't see much, but there is one line at the end of it. I mean, we didn't see much that's new, but there is one line that's sort of getting, some people in the fandoms, Jimmy's rustled. And the context from what we can glean from this 30-second TV spot is that Mark Wahlberg is piloting some sort of alien spaceship, and he crashes it into some guy's car, and the guy's like, you better have insurance, and Mark Wahlberg's like, it's a spaceship! And then he goes to his daughter, sweetie, get me my alien gun. And that exchange seems to have sent some people in the fandom into a bit of a tizzle.
Why?
Because Michael Bay is known for kind of putting in either stupid or soft moric humor into the Transformers movies. Devastator's balls, as you like to point out, being one.
Yeah.
There's like the dog humping scene. There's wheelie humping Megan Fox's leg. There's the scene in the first movie where Sam's parents are like telling him to stop masturbating. So basically, from what I gather, Michael Bay made a statement in which he said that the silly humor would be toned down for Age of Extinction. And then this is in the trailer, and we have some people in the fandom going, oh, Michael Bay's again with the stupid, silly humor. He said it would be in it this time. So I just wanted to get your thoughts. Does that line kill any hope you have for the movie?
No. Okay, the thing is, all right, look. silly, stupid humor is one thing, and I'll get to my defense of this scene here in a second.
And before you go any further on silly, stupid humor, we just described a G1 episode that was basically silly, stupid humor.
Right,
so
exactly.
Let's just say that this is something that has a home in the Transformers franchise.
Right,
go on.
And not just in the Transformers franchise, but in your popcorn action movies as a whole.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Rambo, Rambo 3, you know, Rambo's going through his list of equipments with this Afghani kid, and he's like, oh, and I got my glowy stick, and the kid's like, what does that do? It turns blue. And it's a stupid joke, but it always makes me laugh when I hear it. And action movies on a whole have, you know, the silly little one-liners and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Die Hard, you know, I'm sorry, sir, this line's reserved for emergencies. What do you think I'm doing, lady? Ordering a fucking pizza? and just shit like that. I mean, all action movies, you know, have those things. And, you know, so that being in this movie it's a far cry from having kind of what I see is almost a parody of a situation in our culture. It's a far cry from that to Devastator's, you know, exposed bollocks. And, you know, in this line, you've got a guy who's got his car trashed, and he's obviously kind of a business type fella. In a high stress moment, he knows his car has been destroyed and everything's going to hell. So he goes for the first thing, you know, what he would say in this situation if it were normal.
Yeah.
You know, I hope you're insured.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wahlberg's like, it's a freaking spaceship. And so then he says, honey, get me my alien gun. Well, what are you going to call it? You don't know what the fuck it is. What are you going to call it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything wrong with that scene. I see a parody of our culture in the sense of that's the first thing we think of, and maybe even a bit of satire. That's the first thing we think of when something gets destroyed. Not, oh, my God, are you okay? And what's happening around me? Oh, no, are you insured?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the obvious response, well, dude, it's a fucking spaceship. I'm sorry. I called State Farm. They said I was SOL. And, you know, then him saying, you know, get me my alien gun. Well, what else are you going to call it? You know, maybe you're talking in a Michael Bay movie here. There's guns everywhere. Which gun? The alien gun. Oh, that one. And I don't see anything wrong with that. I see a little bit of satire and a bit of, you know, a little bit of a lighter approach, which, you know, that's fine. As long as the movie's it's a far cry from that to Devastator's balls and the twins and
– oh, the twins.
Fucking, you know, things like that. So just because there's a couple of one-liners in the movie, yeah, I'd be upset if there weren't. You know, that's not making the movie a joke. That's having a joke in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Things like the twins and Devastator's balls make the movie a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to have jokes in your movie, but you don't want the movie to be a joke.
Indeed. Indeed. In my opinion, the funniest thing with Mark Wahlberg is the fact that he has a thick Boston accent, despite the fact that the character he's playing is from Texas.
Oopsie.
That's going to be hilarious. Like, that scene, the one that everyone's seen now, who's like, guys, I think we found a Transformer! And it's like, it's like, dude, you're supposed to be from Texas. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But,
it's not a car, it's a Transformer.
Yeah.
Go park the car in the yard. I know that's a horrible – my Boston accent comes out sounding more English than Boston, I suppose. But, I noticed it in the trailer too, and it's kind of funny.
Moving on from the world of Transformers into the world of Warcraft. Do you see what I did there?
Ooh, very classy, sir.
See what I did there?
How long did it take you to think of that one?
That was a spur of the moment thing.
Ooh.
Yeah. Brain's firing on all cylinders today. So,
both of them, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Full capacity. Anyway, we're going to talk about garrisons in Warlords of Draenor.
You know, there's, Well, you know, we touched on this in like our first episode. We really haven't said all that much about it since then because there hasn't really been much to report.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got the, you know, the alpha going where it's kind of like a closed alpha Blizzard employees playing and, you know, Blizzard slowly releasing more information about what we're going to be seeing coming up. And you've got, the garrisons, which are, you know, WoW's player housing, a major feature, actually one of the major features of Warlords of Draenor. And Blizzard's putting a lot of eggs into this basket. Like there's not many other new features in the game besides the new character models.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this, which is, you know, the player housing, which is something we've been screaming for years.
Oh, you guys have. I mean, I always thought it would be nice, but it was never a make or break thing for me.
It wasn't a make or break thing for me either, but if you're just talking about shit that would be cool to kind of keep the game more interesting during the year long droughts of no content, you know, and yeah, I'm getting that another point. But you know, so yeah, the garrisons are something that's going to be pretty much your housing. The original thing that they had said with this was pretty much you would get to choose where you put it, giggity. And you would have your choice of buildings and so on and so forth. And it almost made it sound like when they first started talking about it, it was almost kind of like an RTS element that they were putting into this game. And I kind of wondered how that would work, and evidently so did they. because what we're getting right now is a bit different. The overall concept is still there. They're still doing it, of course. And it's still going to, you know, you still get your garrison, you still get your choice of buildings, and you still get your choice of, you know, what you get and how you upgrade it and all that other shit. What they've changed fundamentally seems like is how that incorporates itself into the game. Whereas before, what you had, what they were alluding to was basically you'd pick your garrison, or you pick where you choose where you place your garrison, and you'd start doing buildings, and you'd have your little follower peeps. And then they'd go out and do quests for you. Almost, it reminded me kind of like a mobile app game where, yeah, you know, you go and you send shit out and it does stuff and you check back however many hours or days later. Or for anyone who's played Star Trek Online, kind of how the bridge officers work in that game.
Yes.
And so that was kind of the impression that I was getting. Well, now they still have all of that except you don't choose where you place it. Your primary garrison headquarters is going to be in, Shadowmoon Valley, if you're the Alliance,
mm-hmm,
or some other place if you're the Horde, but I don't remember where because Horde doesn't matter.
Fire, something, ridge, mountain, spire.
Oh yeah, that
whatever.
Yeah, the ice volcano place.
Yes.
Yeah, that place over on the other side of the continent. So that's where you'll be if you're Horde.
With the other savages.
Right, exactly. Good luck with plumbing. But yeah, so, you know, you'll have your main base in your faction's respective starting zone, more or less. And then throughout the game, you know, as you level, you'll get choices of what buildings to put in, and then you'll get quests related to those buildings as you level. And then once you complete the quest and get the building, you will get some kind of end zone, perk. Or ability that you can use to kind of reward you for completing the quest.
Mm-hmm.
Even though your main garrison is going to be in your faction starting zone, you're going to have outposts in every zone.
Mm-hmm.
To where eventually, you know, you're going to have a piece of your little quote unquote army every fucking where.
Yes.
And, you know, whichever zone you're in and what building you have will determine what kind of perk or bonus you get. Could be anything from, you know, being able to summon something to help you fight to, they mentioned an artillery barrage, which kind of made me hard for a moment. And, you know, so, you know, shit like that, perks and little cool fun things that you can do in game. They said they wanted it to feel basically epically rewarding when you completed this. And if you feel like you fucked up while you were leveling, you can always go back later on and buy the blueprints once you're max level for the buildings that you didn't get while you were leveling and switch them out and change them around at will.
Very nice. I'm going to be honest. A big thing that bugged me was the lack of the ability to put it where you want.
Giggity.
Lol. I don't know. to me, that just added one more layer of customization. And I'm a big proponent of customization.
Yeah.
And the idea that you could be like, okay, my city's gonna be here. Even if they limited it to, you know, you could put it anywhere you want within, this general area. That even would have been fine. But I don't know. It just makes it seem more generic now, I guess. A bit less exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It does take away from that feeling of, hey, you know, I'm Disraeli and my main base is in whatever zone and that's my thing because I like it. That's what my character likes. That's who he is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it reminds him of Gilneas a little bit. That's why he chose it. And, mm-hmm. yeah, a little bit of the this is me role playing kind of aspect. Is kind of pissed on with this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, yeah, I kind of bemoan the loss of that as well. I'm not calling judgment on it, though, because I'm keeping in mind two things. One, of course, it's only an alpha. And though I don't think they're going to do a 360 or a 180 on this, I think this is, you know, basically the form it will take in the final product. I still say, you know, we haven't played it yet, so we really can't judge. I do know that it's not going to have the same me feeling that it would have if they'd let us choose where we placed it. But I still think it's a good idea. I still think it's going to be cool. It's just now, though, I mean, we're going to be like, yeah, you know, my character has a base in such and such zone, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that does kind of suck. And the other thing that kind of bothers me with the garrisons is that, and this goes again into what you're saying about customization, where, you know, I don't think there's really going to be anything decorative that you can get to customize. You're going to have your template of buildings, and we all have the same ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, the Horde has different ones.
Well, yeah, but there's only two sets of buildings. There's the Horde set and there's the Alliance set.
Right.
And
so your mage tower is going to look the same as my mage tower.
Exactly.
And so on and so forth. So there's really, I don't think there's anything that you can really do to differentiate it. Like, I'd like to have mine say, you know, kind of like a deep navy blue
mm-hmm.
with silver trim or vice versa, kind of emulating the Alliance theme. Whereas, you know, someone may be like, oh, blah, blah, blah is my favorite color. I want it to look like that.
Mm.
You know, you would maybe want it to look like have colors emulating like a symbol or crest of Gilneas or something like that.
Yes.
And so, you know, I don't think you're going to have that. And I think that'd be really cool if you could at least have that to make this feel like, hey, this is mine. And that way when you and I are shit-faced and playing the game and we're at each other's garrison, we don't have to think, hey, am I in Jack's garrison or am I in mine? And
I foresee this being a problem.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it would be nice if we kind of had that, and I think they probably will do something like that. The thing that I'm keeping in mind to kind of temper this a bit is this is an iterative process. It's something that started in Pandaria with the farm. I even called it back then. I'm like, you know, this is them testing player housing, because if you look at the way this works, with
ignored that fucking farm.
Yeah, it was the tillers suck. I hated the tillers, but
I don't want to be your friend.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't kiss your ass. Fuck you.
I don't know you.
Yeah. And I don't want to, frankly. You kind of offend me and you smell funny. But I did it because, well, I'm a money whore and it was good for economics and I made a shit ton of gold off of the stuff that I sold off that fucking farm.
Mm-hmm.
So that was why I did it. Otherwise I wouldn't have been arsed. But so I even said then this is them kind of testing the technology and the concept for, if not full-out player housing, then at least a space of your own for a player. And it turns out that is what they were doing. And they've actually gone a bit further, a little bit more ambitious with it than I thought they would have in some respect. Not as ambitious as I would have liked them to have done it in others. But it's iterative. You know, they're doing this in this expansion. They've already said this garrison is not going to be sticking with us past Draenor. Next expansion is going to be something different. So, you know, they'll take what they've learned. They'll take the feedback that, you know, the player base has given them and they will.
Oh, that'll go swimmingly.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Dickbot, your garrison sucks.
Yeah. You know, you're all faggots. I want my mage tower to look like a big cock, you know, things like that. And you know, so they'll take into account player feedback and, you know, their own data that they, you know, accumulate based on player usage and things like that. And, cause Blizzard is a very big brother in that respect. They do a lot of observation. And of course, yeah, I understand that. They want to see how we react to things. So, you know, they'll do that and they'll change what happens next expansion accordingly. I think, you know, as much as we would like to see certain things in the game from this Garrison concept, I think we kind of got to take that into account and, you know, take into account how much work is even going into this, the way that they're doing it, and kind of just kind of shut the fuck up and take what they give us. It's not going to be as fun, I don't think. I mean, it may. We may be wrong. And they may even be like, hey, you know, we're going to add in some other shit to help you customize the look. And if they would just do that, just give us some palette swap ability where we can change colors of exteriors even. Even something small and frivolous. Like maybe, I don't know, like, okay, like you can design your guild's tabard, design your own personal flag and have that flying in your garrison.
Yeah.
Little things like that, that I think at least would be pretty easy to implement, could make a huge difference in, you know, changing the player's experience with that, make that feel more like it's, my area, my garrison, and not just, hey, another one, just like everybody else's.
Yeah. I mean, Star Trek Online, kind of got customizing down because you and your friend could have the exact same starship in Star Trek Online, but you could customize your bridge, and it wasn't just palette swaps on the bridge. You could change the entire layout of your bridge. You could change the layout of your ship and your ready room. Like, you could have an entirely different ship from your friends, even if you had the same class of starship.
Right.
And that made interacting where you'd maybe go to your friend's ship or they'd come over to yours, it would be exciting because you'd be like, oh, hey, come check out what I did with my bridge.
Right. And when we were on one another's ships, we never had to think which ship we were on. We knew.
Mm.
And because, well, mine was much – this is going to be a phrasing moment. Mine was a lot bigger and
– I'm not going to defend my – I'm going to defend my choice because the Excelsior class – is fucking sexy, and they can roll out. I don't care if in the timeline of the game it's like 150 years old by this point. Fuck you. I'm sticking with it over your Odyssey class.
Yeah. Oh, don't forget my, you know, Dreadnought Beamboat.
Yes.
That fucking pones everything, kind of.
Kind
of. Once I, it'll take me a while to get that fucker turned around, but you know what? In 10 minutes, you're boned. You just wait. I'm turning around. You just stay right the fuck there. When I get this thing turned around, you are fucked.
Indeed. So, like, I mean, and there is a degree of customization here. Like, you can choose which buildings you want. But at the end of the day, all the buildings are going to look the same as everyone else's in your faction.
Mm-hmm.
If Jack and I both have a mage tower, they're both going to look the same. Both of us have a lumber mill. Both of our lumber mills will look the same. There's no way to really alter things, give things a bit of a flavor. It's just – and, like, yeah, it is iterative, and I'm sure that this is just – well, I guess it's step two if we count the farm as step one.
Yeah.
Of a process that's eventually going to get us where we want to go. But I don't know. They made a big deal about these garrisons, and maybe I bought into the hype too much, and maybe that's my fault. But I was disappointed with some of this news. Although I will say I do like the idea that, like, your garrison gives you different abilities. Like, you can order a artillery barrage, for example.
Yeah.
And I saw some of the other examples they threw up. Like, you can summon, like, a gladiator if you have a gladiatorial arena in yours. So I like those. That's very cool. And honestly, I don't know. It just kind of bums me out that after hearing this news, my biggest point of excitement is I can't wait to see what the garrisons are, the expansion after this. That's kind of where I'm at.
One other thing I want to point out with this, and that's that it was mentioned, and anyone who wants to go read this information, head over to MMO Champion. That's the primary source that we use for most of our WoW information.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of peruse the information yourself and take a look and see what you think and maybe see anything that him and I might have missed. But I did see this as, you know, going to be a four-part thing on what's going on with the garrisons. So there may be aspects of this that we don't know about yet. There might be something that will let us kind of change the looks or change the decoration or something like that that they've thrown in that we don't know about yet. Maybe, hopefully, possibly. We'll see. So this is only step one of the Garrison preview, part one of the Garrison preview. So, you know, we'll see in the coming weeks, you know, what we get. And, you know, of course, if anything seems worthwhile, we'll mention it on here. I don't think they'd be doing a four-part preview if there wasn't something worth hearing in each part. Blizzard doesn't tend to, you know, pontificate too much about things. They usually only talk when they got something important to say.
Or what they think is important to
well,
say.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that too. But, you know, so we'll see. We'll see what the next few weeks bring us and, you know, bitch or cheer as appropriate.
Regardless, I have to admit I'm kind of looking forward to Warlords of Draenor just because I can't wait to kill Horde cultural icons.
Yeah, I am too. And the story, I'm finding myself warming up to the story and the premise more than I was at first. At first I think you had a little bit of this too, where we were a little bit bummed out because we had our hearts set so hard on going to Argus.
I still think Argus is coming.
I do too. And I'm not cleaning it up when it does. But, yeah, I think at some point we will get to go to Argus. Argus, for the WoW uninitiated, is the homeworld of the race called the Draenei. And it was taken over by the organization of psychopathic demon lords known as the Burning Legion. And they just basically went Mick Jagger in a hotel room on the place. And so pretty much that's where we kind of think.
When we finally put the kibosh on the Burning Legion, it'll be going to Argus.
Right.
And they hinted at that in Pandaria when we talked to Raytheon, Deathwing's kid.
Mm-hmm.
He has a vision and the vision is of the Burning Legion attacking Azeroth, and then he talks about one planet above all the others, and so it's very much hinted that Argus is going to be a thing we're going to do at some point. And then they also dropped hints at the end of Pandaria where, you know, the Alliance was going to go on the offensive against the undead in Gil-Naas and Lordaeron. And then neither of those two plot threads have been picked up, and instead we're going to Draenor. And I really am warming up to the idea of Draenor, but at the same time, I can't help but think there were better story ideas that they wanted to do, and then Chris Metzen pulled rank and was like, I want orcs!
Well, now but let's be fair. Mm-hmm. It may not have been a better story, but it was a story that we wanted.
Which makes it better.
Well, yeah, it does. But I'm just saying, you know, and of course, as I've said on the show before, anyone that doesn't agree with us are idiots. But, you know, there is that. And I really loved Blizzard's response when Draenor was announced. And someone's like, well, what about the Alliance going to Gil-Naas and, you know, going on the offensive against the undead like was kind of hinted at in Pandaria? And they're like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and not do that.
Well, they didn't say that exactly. They said, we're putting the pin back in that grenade.
Yeah,
Which says that it's a story idea they want to have for the future, but that they're not going to do right now because we need to get orcs.
Right. And they do that the same way you and I will talk about shit, you know, for the show. We'll be like, yeah, we'll save that for a day when it's a slow news week.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they're doing. They're saving it for a time when they don't have much else to do or, you know, want to do something where it fits into whatever story is going on. And I get that. I just would have really liked to have seen it sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the thing is, okay, Gil-Naas is already technically held by the Alliance.
It's just
a mess.
A mess, yes.
Yeah. So fucking, you know what, give Anduin a fucking mop and a gas mask, better yet, just a mop, and have him go in there.
Oh no, Anduin died of exposure to the plague. Oh well. And then Varian and Sky Admiral Rogers can bone, and we can have a new Prince of Stormwind who doesn't suck.
Indeed. All hail Queen Sky Admiral Rogers.
Oh, she is awesome. But, yes, I'm still looking forward to Draenor. I'm looking forward to seeing Warchief Blackhand, aka one of only two orc characters I actually like, the other one being his son. So, the Blackhand family, you know, I'm down with them as far as orcs go, but the rest of them can all piss up a rope.
I'm really looking forward to, getting finally some lore and some interaction and seeing Valen do something.
Oh, he dies.
Yeah.
We get to see Valen do things. I can't wait to see Warchief Blackhand because his shirt is on fire.
Look, man, whatever floats your boat, I'm not here to judge. It's okay.
With that out of the way, it's time for us to talk about episode 7, the second to last episode of Azeroth Choppers. We are nearing the end of this journey, sir.
Yep, and we finally, after much corral, gotten to see what the bloody bikes look like finished.
My big reaction from this show, aside from the bikes, I want to kind of talk about the bikes last. But as far as the show went, we saw that one guy on Team Alliance, on the Alliance and engineering crew, he did not want to put a front fender on the Alliance bike. His boss said, it's going to happen. And then surprisingly, he said, I want a fender on it now.
So, whose name is on the building? Whose name is on the building?
It was actually, and then Paul Jr. even more or less said that. He goes, no, he's got an opinion just like me. It's just that my opinion's the one that's going to happen.
Yeah, pretty much. Everybody's opinion matters. Mine matters more, though.
Because my name's on the building.
Exactly.
Yeah. I also kind of liked how, like, they call up Blizzard, and they're like, bikes are done! We're gonna turn them on for ya!
Yes, that was epic.
The Alliance bike turns on beautifully. They get to the Horde bike, and it putters out.
Yeah. And I was like, lol.
I mean, that's what you get. The Horde is made out, blood elves aside, the Horde is made out of, savages, you see. And it's not their fault that they don't understand technology, but it's obvious they don't have a grasp on it.
Well, now they do have the goblins, who are the tech guys, and I really couldn't call them savage.
No, but they blow things up. They can't make anything that doesn't blow up.
Right. So anyone who's listening who is a fan of gnomish engineering, there you go. You can just say, well, the gnomish engineering worked and the goblin did not.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So I found it hilarious that the Horde bike just, like, it took two tries to get the damn thing to work.
Yeah.
That was great. Well, you know, at least you know if the Alliance bike, it'll run. But I guess we should talk about the bikes themselves. I will fully admit that motorcycles are not my forte. In fact, this would actually have been a good thing to bring Greg on because he is a biker. I'll have to ask for his opinion on the next episode of Bass. But what? So bikes not, biking is really not my forte. So I'm coming at this purely from an outsider, purely which design I kind of like best. Jack, are you into motorcycles? Has that ever been a thing that you were interested in?
A little bit to an extent. My mother, ironically, and I say that ironically, you just had to have known my mother or have known more about her, which I think you know enough about her, Mike, to where you get this. Mm-hmm. She actually was into motorcycles. She actually had one at one point. Go fucking figure, right?
Yeah.
And be sure to drink your Ovaltine. So, you know, and I had kind of a passing interest. I kind of have an appreciation of awesome machines in general. I don't care if it's a bike or a car or a truck or, you know, a big fuck all tank with the nuke launcher on the back and two turrets that spin around independent. I need a cold shower now. Anyways, I'm an appreciator of awesome machines, period. And so in that sense, yeah, I from a mechanical aspect, I was interested in this. A little bit of a gearhead, not a diehard gearhead, but I do appreciate what goes into these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from a bike standpoint, I think they're badass as fuck, both of them. Mm-hmm. I really do. Both are designed beautifully. You can tell the amount of work that went into them. I mean, it's Paul Jr., so he doesn't fuck around. Now, in terms of, you know, and voting is open now, by the way, kids.
Voted for the Alliance.
Yeah, vote for the Alliance, Mike is a teacher, okay? Mm. He's got a lot of free time on his hands. Now, I'm not saying he's going to come to your house and beat your kneecaps, but I'm not saying he's not either. He's got a lot of free time.
Yep. Summer's coming up, guys. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Now, being Canadian, he'll ask first, but he'll still do it. I won't hit you with this baseball bat now if it's not terribly inconvenient. So, vote Alliance if you love freedom. Vote Alliance if you don't. Because you have no freedom, vote Alliance. Anyways,
adhere.
Adhere. No fucks given. So, that being said, I love both bikes. I love both of the designs, and I would happily ride either one of them. Mm-hmm. Which bike do I think better exemplifies its respective faction? Mm-hmm. I honestly kind of have to say the Horde.
Mm. Well, they've got those shoulder pads going on.
They've got the shoulder pads. They've got
which I just want to point out. Those they made a big deal about red shoulder pads kind of being an iconic Horde look. Red shoulder pads with spikes, and that is true on a lot of art. The Horde orcish soldiers have those red spiky shoulder pads. And in the game, the guards of Orgrimmar, the orcish capital, wear those red spiky shoulder pads. But as far as I know, you can't actually get those in game. So, maybe I'm wrong, but I just wanted to say that if you're a Horde player and you want those red spiky shoulder pads for your guy, you can't get them.
I'm pretty sure you can.
I haven't seen them, like, at all. I've never come across them, and I'm an armor whore, so.
Well, yeah, but you don't really play, I mean, you've got your Belf.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, on my Blood Elf guy, you know, if I'm in the auction house checking out, see what armor's available, like, I've never run up against it. I can't think of, like, a guy who I've seen wearing it, like, in the game. I don't know.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I've seen something similar, but again, I really couldn't tell you for sure. I mean, that would have been like back when I was leveling, my first tune, which was in what, 2008? Hmm. So, you know, I really couldn't tell you. But you know, they got the shoulder pads on, you know, over the rear wheels. They've got the rear treads rather. They've got the tusks coming down. They've got those wooden, footrests on the sides there. And I like the whole trike design in general better. I think it looks cool. And they got those two badass exhaust pipes coming up the back end of it.
Yeah, but those, that trike look, training wheels. I'm just going to say it. Training wheels. The Horde needs training wheels. Oh.
I do like it. I do think it's really cool. Like I was telling you before the show, when I look at the two bikes and I see the Alliance bike and I see the Horde bike, when I look at the Alliance bike, I think it's meant to be like a fast, scouting vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at the Horde bike, I see it as kind of like an infantry combat vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I see different functionality there, perhaps just, I mean, if it were real and you were kind of looking at how to utilize these two machines, mm-hmm. that's what I would do with them. I also think that, as one of the Blizzard guys actually said from the from one of the previous episodes, when you look at the Alliance spike from the right angle, and it's got a very low profile, and that rear section of the armor plates that goes over the back of the bike, it looks like an insect's thorax to me.
See, I thought that when I first saw them putting that bit together on the show, but when they added the bronze detailing and the accoutrements to that part of the bike, it really helped make it shine through as armor, and it seemed less insectoid once I really saw the finished product.
Well, and yeah, you're right. I mean, it does help break it up a bit and help, you know, water that aesthetic down a bit and kind of give you some contrast there. The picture of it, though, that I'm looking at, you really can't – the brass doesn't stand out as much, or the gold or whatever the fuck it is. It doesn't stand out as much as maybe it should on that. Like, I would have added maybe some more – a bit more of an ornate look along the sides and another Alliance emblem on the actual back of the bike on that last bit, mm-hmm. where it comes down to a point. I would have done that. Now, on the front of the bike, I think it looks brilliant. I love how they've got that shield on there with the Alliance symbol on there.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you see before it runs you the fuck over. And my only real criticism about the front of the bike, I do like the swords. I think they look a bit generic.
You wanted King Rin's swords.
Well, that's what they discussed on the actual show.
Yeah.
And, King Rin's sword is not generic. He's not Gen Greymane, for Christ's sake.
Has subdued style, sir.
He's not, you know, King Rin would not be caught dead being that generic. He's got a real badass-looking sword. And they're like, yeah, let's do something like with that on the front of the bike. And then we get kind of like a scimitar looking deal going down the front. It's not bad. I like it. I just think it could have been a little less generic, maybe. I do think what I really like also about the Alliance design is the dual treads, you know, so that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. When it comes to the Horde bike, I guess I was just expecting something. This is going to sound really weird because it has those shoulder pad designs on the back, and it has the tusks up front, and it even has the Horde shield on the sides. But I was expecting, I don't know, more Horde-like. Like, it just seems like you have those very Horde-like elements, but then underneath it, you just sort of have a motorcycle. Like, the Alliance bike from the skeleton outward, it all seems like it's Alliance. The Horde bike, it kind of just looks like a skeleton that's had Horde bits placed over it, if that makes any sense. And
yeah,
I don't know. I was expecting even more Horde-like than what we got.
I get you. You're saying basically the Alliance looks like a full, real Alliance bike, whereas to you the Horde bike looks like a trike that someone added some aftermarket shit onto, mm-hmm. to make it look kind of Horde-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. I mean, more of the Alliance bike is covered, and the aesthetic is definitely more uniform going from stem to stern, as it were. Whereas the Horde bike, you know, it's kind of broken up. You know, on the front you've got the tusks, on the back you've got the pads, but that's kind of what they're going for. Again, since Horde is more chaotic and savage, take a drink. You know, so it's going to be a bit more modeled. It's going to be a little bit more incongruous than the Alliance bike, which is going to have a more uniform, disciplined design, because mm-hmm. the Alliance is more disciplined.
So that just means to me that the Horde is too stupid to carry one idea throughout an entire project.
And, you know, actually, since having this discussion with you in that respect, because him and I mean, we touched points on it before the show, but we didn't really go into it. If it's something that we know we haven't really talked to each other about much, we'll wait until the show to actually have our discussion on it, so it's more organic that way. But, you know, now that I've had this discussion with you about the Alliance bike, you know, it's kind of changed my opinion of it a little bit, because now that I describe it in those contexts, I can actually see where it does kind of embody the Alliance. It's classy, it's uniform, the design is disciplined.
The superior intellect shines through.
Lol.
I don't know. And plus, you know, they chose on the Horde bike to do those tusks in front, which just reminds me of Garrosh, and Garrosh is a chode bucket.
Now, you and I, again, I've said this before, you and I both know that if we were Hordies instead of Alliance players, you and I would have been all over him.
Yeah, but we're not, so we're not.
let me correct my phrasing on that. Isn't all over, isn't all about the Garrosh love. Let me rephrase again. We would have been like, yeah, what's so wrong with Garrosh? Why can't we keep him? And both of us would love for an Alliance player or an Alliance character leader to go as apeshit insane.
I don't know about that, because King Rin mellowed the fuck out, but then he ended up winning the war, so I'm not one to question his methods.
I don't know. I liked Crazy Nut Rin. And now I find myself actually liking Jaina more than her, now that her cheese has slid off the fucking cracker. I mean, she still can't do fuck all right, but she's at least crazy.
Well,
and
even
wants
when
to
she does,
up.
Even when she does the right thing in game, she screws up. Like, she finally kicks the Horde out of Dalaran, but then it ends up costing the Alliance, you know, bringing the Blood Elves back in. So,
you stupid whore! We were about to sign the papers.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, even when Jaina does the right thing, she does it in a way that screws things up for everyone, so. Yeah. And yeah, I know. From a mechanic standpoint, they couldn't have had the Blood Elves come back to the Alliance, because then that would have just fucked up everyone from a player perspective. But, you know, just from a storyline, if I'm going just based on what happened in the storyline, it's funny how Jaina, even when she does the right thing, does it in the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get you. You know, purges Dalaran of Horde, fucks up negotiations with Blood Elves. Damn it, Jaina.
Yeah, just from a storyline perspective, if the Blood Elves had come back to the Alliance, then that would have left Sylvanas sandwiched there between the Alliance, and then she would have had to play nice and get the fuck out of Gil'neas.
Yeah, and though honestly, even from an in-game mechanic standpoint, now I know what I'm going to say. If there are any Horde players who do listen to the show, this is going to piss you off, and I do kind of apologize because I know it's not what you would want. But you know, if say you know they had Blood Elves come back to the Alliance, they could always then make you know do something that needs to be done anyways. Redo the Blood Elf starting area into a neutral zone, and then you can choose your faction. You can be a Blood Elf who stayed loyal to Garrosh and still be with the Horde.
So do the Pandara thing.
Right. And
where,
then,
like, you choose when you're done the starting zone.
Right. And then have another storyline where there's a schism with the Alliance and the Night Elves. Some of them upset about bringing the Blood Elves back in. Some of them upset with, you know, the Dwarves, who are, you know, a complete antithesis to the Night Elves. One's a tree hugger. The other one clears entire forest just to dig up shit. And
we've got to get the minerals, Jimmy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you have some of them, you know, break with the Alliance and go over to the Horde to be with their Tauren buddies. Because, you know, there's that whole Cenarian expedition dynamic there between the Taurens and the Night Elves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they could have done that and had Night Elves be a playable Horde race to compensate. Which, then that's why I apologize, because I know that's like a Horde player's worst nightmare is to have Night Elves. But, you know, it could be worse.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to call it for the night. This has been episode 17 of Basically a Geek Show. You can catch us on YouTube. You can catch us on iTunes, on Spreaker, and at the basicallyasportsshow.com website. And you can send your mail to basicallygeekshow@gmail.com and catch us on Twitter at a geek show.
We're on the Twitch shitter.
We're on the Twit books.
And
what
my,
we're on.
But we're not on the MyFace, and frankly, we probably never will be.
No.
Because fuck Facebook.
Indeed. And so with that shameless shilling out of the way, this has been Mike for Jack signing off.
Night.